off top, Venus rotates backwards. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. I am joined by Charlie Kravitz, as usual, and now someone who actually knows more about the draft than everyone else we know, certainly more than us, Danny Kelly. What up, bro?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
Did you know Venus spins backwards?
I did not know that.
All right, put it in your pocket. Hold on to it. You never know when you need some information like that.
I've lied about so many facts I've pretended to know after you've done this.
I appreciate that one of you is secure in their own intelligence and can go ahead and be honest about it. The other one out here faking. Come on, snack. Just because you're cute don't mean that people think you're dumb, so you don't have to overcompensate.
Okay.
I mean, you look extra cute today.
I'm just going to move right by that. Do you guys want to talk about the draft? We can just dive right in.
Why not?
All right, so Danny, I'm a Commanders fan. Mm. It's been tough times for several decades, but we have the number two pick. As you know, we recently signed Marcus Mariota, which seems to be sending the smoke signals that they're going to draft Jaden Daniels with the number two pick. I was looking at your big board. Mm-hmm. You have Drake May, number two. You have Jaden Daniels, number 10. And so it's sort of two-parter here. What I want to go through is like, how close are they as prospects? Because it seems like quarterbacks would go 1, 2, 3. And does it make sense to you that the Commanders would go with Daniels at 2 over May?
So, I mean, obviously, I still like Jaden Daniels if I got him at number 10. I think he has a lot of really exciting traits and talent. But I just don't really get why Drake May is kind of getting a lot of hate right now. Or not hate, but like people are kind of doubting him. To me, he is closer to like a Caleb Williams caliber prospect than like a tier down or whatever. He is, you know, from a tools, traits, skill set, and size and overall athletic ability like point of view, he is kind of like the whole package at quarterback. I think in a lot of drafts he might be the number one overall pick when you're not having a Caleb Williams out there. So I don't really understand like the Drake May narrative right now, to be totally honest, but that's not to say I don't like Jaden Daniels. I would put Jaden Daniels just a tier below May on my board, but I kind of understand like why the Commanders would be drawn to a guy like him. He's obviously very, very athletic in terms of what he can do with his legs. Throws a beautiful deep ball, you know, has that dual threat skill set where he could be a big part of the run game and kind of, you know, use his skill set that way. But there's some concerns I have with him that kind of like keep me from really buying in completely.
What are the concerns? What are the differentiating factors between the two of them? Because it's kind of been posed as Caleb and then the other guys when it actually feels right. Like it's these first two guys, at least in your view, it's mm-hmm. Caleb and Drake. Then there's Jaden Daniels.
So I think first off, and this is not like a deal breaker by any means, but Jaden Daniels' frame is just like very thin. He's like rail thin. I saw him at the combine and I remember thinking like, wow, he is even skinnier than I thought. And then he decided not to weigh in, which kind of just enforced like that thought to me. And especially even because on the podium, he was right next to JJ McCarthy. And I remember thinking like JJ McCarthy looks significantly bigger than him in terms of just like his overall bulk. And it's not like McCarthy is like a big man either. So I think that is a slight concern, especially the way he plays. You know, my buddy Nate Tice threw this out there that he has some Johnny Knoxville to his game, and yeah, I can never forget that. Like it's like the greatest. He, every game, at least once a game, he just gets completely annihilated when he's running the football or scrambling or whatever. And so, you know, there's concerns from that point of view. I think, you know, as an overall passer, he's not quite as, I think, like versatile as Drake May. I think Drake May has like more clubs in his bag, so to speak, and so there's just like it's really like picking nits, I think, probably because I do like him a lot. But I think these are the reasons I've got Drake May higher. And Jaden Daniels, honestly, a couple years older, took him a little bit longer to get going in college. There's some variables there, too. So I just think, you know, Drake May right now, you know, like his trajectory is higher to me, and he has a higher ceiling. Jaden Daniels.
The Jaden Daniels stuff, the Johnny Knoxville stuff is great because I fortunately, I don't have to make some big board, but I've been watching a lot more of those guys, and that's the thing that jumps out to me as concerning is him jumping into the Florida State D-line, and it's not it's not even third down. It's like, what are you doing? All those decisions. All those bad decisions are concerning, and those are habits that you tend not to be able to break. But, I mean, he can get bigger. Like, we've seen that for Lamar. But the high floor that you get from a running or a quarterback with running ability, I guess you also get some of that from Drake May, but not as nearly as much. But I guess you're not valuing that difference as much as some people are, right?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is, I guess, question is, how much are you going to use that? If Washington drafts him with the idea they're going to make him into a Lamar-style runner, that I can actually understand that. If they want it to just be sort of like a part of the offense and sort of like a changeup to the offense, like that's to me a little bit different. But yeah, Jaden Daniels, extremely explosive, slippery runner. He is, you know, one of a few quarterbacks I've ever studied really that can turn any play into like a 70-yard touchdown at any given time. He's that kind of runner. I don't think Drake May has that potential. I think May is more athletic than people are giving him credit for in terms of his ability to run. He scored something like 16 touchdowns in his college career. So he's not like necessarily afraid to run the ball, but yeah, Jaden Daniels, whole different type of prospect from that point of view.
If I forced you to make the argument the other way, is there an argument aside from the like constructed offense around running ability? Is there like, what are the shortcomings to Drake May, or what are the superpowers? What is the areas for growth for Jaden Daniels? Like, how do you construct this argument? Because like, they're very smart people in the office, front office now, at least we believe that the new front office is smart. And if they are leaning his direction, give my man Snack some hope, baby.
I can actually pretty easily do that. So no, first of all, when I was watching him the first time, I just kept having visions of Russell Wilson, the way he throws the football down the sideline. He is incredibly, incredibly accurate, like these moonshot passes down the field. And so from a, like, the way that we're designing this offense, we're going to be like, we're going to run the football, run play action, throw it deep. Like, I can build a case to have Daniels do that because he has, number one, obviously the athletic ability to like be utilized on bootlegs and run stuff that is big, like a read option run stuff. But he also can really throw it deep, create these explosive plays. That was like one of the biggest things that he did last year in terms of just pushing the ball down the field, creating explosives. That's really how you win in the NFL these days. It's really hard to dink and dunk down the field consistently. And so his deep ball accuracy and aggressiveness and just pinpoint ball placement down the sidelines is really something that stood out to me. So I can see, you know, a team falling in love with that, a coaching staff falling in love with that. I think, you know, Washington has some pretty good receivers in theory. I'm still like holding out belief in Jahan Dotson as like a good player. And so, you know, if they want to be that run the football and throw deep and create explosives, I think that's where Jaden Daniels has a slight edge over Drake May, who is, to be honest, a little bit scattershot, a little bit more scattershot, I'd say, with his accuracy than Jaden Daniels was.
His accuracy and on all three levels, or just his deep ball accuracy, you would say?
I'd say just his deep ball accuracy for the most part. I mean, like,
and that's, I guess that goes to your point about Drake May having all the clubs in his bag, is like, he may not have as good a driver as Drake May. See, golf talk. I know what a driver is.
Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah.
Take that, Snack. You're not the only one that can go golfing with goofy golf friends. But yeah, I don't
go. Oh yeah, Danny Kelly. The story behind this: I'm going golfing with Kevin Clark.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he keeps on texting me saying, this golf trip's going to be a movie, bro.
Embarrassing.
And I don't know if he's saying it ironically or not.
Well, he better be, because otherwise that's embarrassing.
Oh, my God.
What is the – I don't know why. Maybe because I'm tired and hungry, why I'm feeling pretty negative right now. But I think I understand the way that Caleb Williams has success, and I have a better feeling after talking to you, Danny, how May and Daniels could have success. But what is the concern? Like, if things don't go well – like, I guess there's always the situation that the quarterback lands in, but is there a skill set that you're expecting to develop for each of these guys, or an Achilles heel? I guess my guess for Caleb would be holding onto the ball too long would be his Achilles heel, trying to make a big play where there isn't, which is what your man Russ, his problem is too.
Right. Buddy. For Caleb Williams in particular, I think the most frustrating part about watching him play is you just want him to like hit his back foot and get the ball out. You know, like there's so many plays from last year, especially where he drops back and kind of has a guy he could maybe hit, but then just decides to scramble around, run around, try to make a big play. You know, there was, I think, a lot of circumstances around the team this year where his defense is really, really bad. I think some of the offensive design wasn't necessarily, you know, best for him just like getting rid of the ball quickly. It was more like a big play type of offense. And so, yeah, that's the big thing is can he go into the NFL and play on time, play in rhythm, get rid of the football, not take sacks, because he takes a lot of sacks. And that's the other problem with Jayden Daniels too, is like his pressure to sack ratio is really high. I think with Jayden Daniels, the worry is that he doesn't really have like the keep the play alive and make a pass and kind of like, you know, get outside the pocket and make a play type of deal. It's either he, you know, throws off his back foot as he hits, as he gets to the top of his drop, or he takes off running. It's kind of like, those are the two things he does. He doesn't really have the all break outside the pocket and find a guy downfield, which is what Caleb Williams is really good at. So, you know, and of course, if you can run like Jayden Daniels, you probably do the same thing. But I think those two guys in particular need to like iron that part of their games out as they get to the next level. And then, you know, with Drake May, I think it's just like same deal as Caleb Williams in some ways, where just take the easy throw, man. Like you don't have to play hero ball in every play. One of the things that kind of stuck out to me with Drake May is he's very, very aggressive. Sometimes he'll just throw it into triple coverage and you're like, man, just dump it off and live to see another play. So, you know, I think a lot of these, or all three of these guys, obviously have things to work on when they get to the pros. And, you know, I think most of the stuff that they have is coachable. So that's why I'm still very high on all three of them. But it's not like these are perfect prospects by any means.
I'm a tiny bit scared now that Cliff Kingsbury, who designed an offense for Caleb Williams to hold the ball too long, might be coaching Jayden Daniels, whose problem is that he doesn't protect himself physically.
Yeah.
And given your history with quarterbacks who struggle with protecting themselves physically, as a Commanders fan, yeah, might be reminiscent of RG3. So you better enjoy this first year, buddy. Enjoy this first year.
You know what? I'm looking at Chris Sims' top six quarterback prospect rankings. You know what he has? He has Jayden Daniels 2, number one in other years. So I'm just going to pretend that's the correct board at all times if he's our pick.
I'm a Danny Kelly guy.
Yeah, I am too.
I trust. Don't try to jump on our side now. We don't want you, golf man.
I mean, Chris Sims, the buttons are all the way up on that shirt on the, you know, the Hunger Games Capital halftime show. Let's talk about receivers for a little bit, because this people have talked about this being like one of the best receiver drafts of all time, and it seems like there's a big one that's part of a big three, and then PFF has 10 guys in their top 40 who are wide receivers, and a lot of them are awesome prospects in this late first round or second round. But I want to, how big of a gap is there between Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze?
I don't think there's a very big gap. I think it's funny because it's kind of like choose your flavor. With Marvin Harrison, he's sort of a complete guy.
That's my flavor. Complete guy. I like that flavor.
That's why I have him ranked number one, in fact. Yeah. No, he's got size, speed, athleticism, burst, explosiveness, extremely good body control, which I think is one of the like big characteristics of his game. Is like he can reach back behind his hip and reel in a pass or go down really low, running full speed and not really slow down and just keep going. He's such a good, and this sounds stupid to say, but like catcher of the football, he is he's a great receiver. He really, you know, has great hands and just body control. So to me, he's like kind of the complete package. And Malik Nabers is, I just been kind of explaining it as he's pure sex. He's just explosiveness personified. He's just so fast. Flavor. And if you want that element in your offense, which I think every team does, you know, he's a great example of that. He's really good after the catch. I think that's kind of where he separates himself from the other two, is his yards after the catch ability is incredible. You know, every time he catches a football, he could create a touchdown kind of deal. And then with Rome Odunze, another guy who's like got a pretty complete skill set, but just I don't think he's quite as explosive. His testing numbers were really impressive, but he on the field, I wouldn't say he's nearly as explosive as the other two guys in terms of yards after the catch. His yards after the catch numbers aren't that great. He's more of just a prototypical X receiver guy who can win on third downs when you need someone to win in the red zone. Throw it up to him, he's going to come down with it. Really competitive in the air. Like his contested catch numbers are really, really impressive. And I think sometimes that can be a negative thing, because you're like, oh, if he's got a lot of contested catches, that means he can't get open. But I think he can do both. He can get open, he can run routes, he can route guys up, you know, he can create separation, but he also is incredibly dominant at the catch point. He's just bigger, stronger, and like times his jump better. He does a really good job of boxing out. So he's sort of a different, you know, type of receiver than these other two guys too. So it is sort of, what are you looking for your offense when you're choosing between these three guys?
I'm a sucker for speed. So tell me why Worthy is going to work.
You know who Worthy reminds me of is Zay Flowers.
There we go. I love it.
I think when you first hear he ran a 4-2-1, you're like, oh, then he must be a really good deep threat, which really wasn't his game at Texas. He was a yards after the catch guy. You know, they used him a lot in the short and intermediate area on screens, kind of like how I pictured the Ravens use Zay Flowers. Obviously, he has the ability to get deep, but his big, you know, value is just, you know, get the ball in space, make guys miss, you know, basically just annihilate pursuit angles from defenders, make it really hard for the defense to like catch you and tackle you. And, you know, that's the kind of the element that I think he brings. So if, you know, you're looking for a guy who's going to be like an elite deep threat, like DeSean Jackson, I don't think that's really his game right now, at least. You know, if you look at the numbers, he was not a very good deep threat for Texas last year. So he's more of a yards after the catch creator, explosive threat that can, you know, get him the ball and then let him do his thing.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
I got a question for you, Dominique. This is a question that was bantered about on the Ringer Fantasy Football Show. Really good podcast.
Thank you.
We need a podcast beef.
Yeah, Pablo, because we're late for this podcast because of Pablo Torre finds out. So yep. That's our beef. So Marvin Harrison Jr. skipping the pre-draft process to actually work on being a better football player. You went through this. Would you have been more prepared for rookie training camp, actually practicing drills and training to get ready for camp or the combine?
I think it's not as much being prepared, like trying new drills. Like Marvin Harrison is not working on new drills. He doesn't have the playbook that he's going to. I think it is more important, honestly, to rest. Like what the rookie wall that everyone hits, or not everyone hits, but lots of players hit. In part, it's because that you don't have an off season. Like you go from your season being over to then dedicating all your time and energy to preparing physically for the combine. And then after that, you might get a little break before you're into before the draft happens. And then you're into mini camps and then training camp. And so like mentally, emotionally, and physically, I think that's the best thing. If you could, yeah, that could help you be in better shape than do what most of us non-like best receiver in the draft guys have to go through in order to get picked up.
That makes a lot of sense because rookie camp starts like a week or two after the draft, I feel like. I don't actually remember, but it feels like very soon after the draft ends.
Yeah, I remember. Well, I got on a plane the next day I don't think we did any working out, but I do remember that. We got off of the Roma Odunze topic, but I wanted to go back. I really liked him before the combine. Mm-hmm. But I got a question for you. Scale of negative 10 to positive 10. How did you feel about that foolishness? Oh, not the foolishness. How did you feel about that three-cone drill business? So for those who don't know, Roma Odunze wanted to get a specific time in three-cone drill. He kept knocking over the cones, so he kept doing it. He stayed out there and kept drilling and drilling and drilling while everybody else was gone. I will not share my opinion because you can't tell it by the tone of my voice at all.
I would say I'm like a neutral zero on that. I think it was I think it was like performative for sure. And it doesn't help that he didn't get it. You know what I mean? Like, he failed ultimately at getting what he wanted to do. So, but I do appreciate, you know, that in a day and age now where a lot of players are not even running the three cone at all, and a lot of guys are not even doing short shuttle, he's out there competing. He's out there trying really hard. At least there's that. I do think it is performative a little bit. But I ultimately fall like kind of right down the middle.
How jealous is Russell Wilson watching that he didn't think of that move?
Oh, he's jealous of JJ McCarthy for doing the meditation stuff. I should have really thought of that. Go out there on the, you know, right by the goalpost and have 50 cameras all around me just sitting there meditating. That's right up Russell Wilson's alley. That's right out of his playbook.
I've talked about this before, but my issue with Roma Odunze doing all that stuff was like, it doesn't actually matter. Like, I'm fine with you doing I'm all in, I'm gonna get it done thing in the right places. But like, all right, maybe some coaches will buy into this and move you up their draft board. So yeah, by all means. But also, what are you doing? You hurt yourself. Go sit down somewhere. Like, demonstrate your intelligence and your decision-making and your ability to prioritize things that don't freaking matter. Anyway, and you hold on, Danny, you're I'm glad he's out there competing guy. You are not old enough to be out there. So you didn't like that Marvin didn't do anything? You wanted Marvin out there too, huh?
No, actually, I didn't care about that either. Okay. Maybe I'm just like, I don't put any that much stock into the combine. Maybe that's where I land.
Combine is fun, but I don't think
everything you said about like rest and thinking through it and doing it right made so much sense for a guy like Marvin Harrison, who's not falling past five anyway. You know, he's not going to fall out of the top, maybe six or seven picks, like at the worst case scenario. So why go do all that stuff and put yourself through that stress?
This is the most important question of the day. Of all the combine drills, what do you think that you could get closest to the players in doing? Like, what's the mean? And I'm including all players. What do you think you could get closest to in the mean? Weight and height and all that stuff is out, like actual abilities.
That's gonna be my answer.
I knew Charlie was gonna say I'm about as big as the corner. I could do it. No.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 6'1", 195, so I'm about the size of a corner, I guess. Except for I'm not nearly as ripped. Probably.
There we go. We need
wrong
three cone.
Wrong kind of weight. Yeah.
We need three cone. Or
short
you can
shuttle.
Do. Oh, short shuttle.
In my day, this is decades ago now. I was pretty quick. You know what I mean? Like quick back and forth.
6'1", that's a shock. Short shuttle for a 6'1" guy doesn't sound like, I don't know. Okay.
I remember back in the day, you ever do Sweet 16s? Did you play basketball growing up?
Not really. I mean, I played up until eighth grade, and I got to high school and was like, I'm good on that. I'm a football guy.
Football's probably the answer. Sweet 16s where you run to the free throw line, back to the end line, half court, end line, three quarter court, and this is a conditioning.
Whoa. Where on earth do they call those Sweet 16s?
Where I grew up in Washington, I don't know what they call them.
Those are obviously, like, I'm sure suicide. The listeners are yelling. Yeah.
Oh, I have heard suicides. Yes.
I have heard suicides. They're called suicides. Is this you guys progressive Washington people? Like, yeah,
we're basically Canada. We're basically Canada.
So this is the first time I've listened to your podcast for years, and I think I'm right between you and your co-hosts in age, and I've taken your side on every single like nomenclature dispute, and this is the first time. On our podcast, I'm stunned by it.
That's unacceptable.
What can I say? Maybe I honestly could be remembering wrong what they're called.
Nah, you're just a progressive person who recognizes that we probably shouldn't call anything suicides.
Yeah. This was the 90s. I mean, everything went back then, you know.
Can I ask one last Marvin Harrison question, which is, so we've seen drafts before where it's like the top receiver, if you were to project ahead of their career, like top receiver versus the field, who is going to have the best career? Like, I think in like a Calvin Johnson draft, a Larry Fitzgerald draft, those prospects were so far ahead of people that it's like, compared to the second, third, fourth, fifth receiver, you're going to take them as most likely having the best career. Mm-hmm. Marvin Harrison Jr. versus the field. He's going to a decent situation with Kyler Murray. Would you be willing to take the Marvin Harrison versus the field bet that he'll be the best receiver from this draft?
Yes, I think so. Here's why. Because I'm a little bit worried that – I think Marvin Harrison's the best receiver in this class pretty clearly. And then my other worries are, what if Malik Nabers goes to the Giants? And then what? And I'm like, then he's stuck with whatever quarterback there is. What if Roma Dunze or whoever Malik Nabers goes to the Jets? And then they get 1 year of Aaron Rodgers, and then who knows, like another 30 years of quarterback misery. I think all the other guys, I think, are pretty solid, but those three are like pretty clearly in a class of their own in terms of like the talent, the production, the profile of a draft prospect. And so I'm betting on that trio. And I think Marvin Harrison being almost guaranteed to land with a good quarterback with Kyler Murray. It's obviously not a guarantee yet, but that's how it feels like it's going. Landing with a guy like Kyler Murray in an offense that seems to be ascending, I'm taking that bet all day long, versus like not knowing exactly where Nabers or Dunze are going to land, and they potentially could land with a really bad quarterback situation and be stuck for years playing with some crappy offense. Yeah, I'm going with Harrison.
So Brock Bowers, this is something that I think has been pretty interesting to me, because I think if you watch college football for the last few years, he's someone that you know is essentially a dominant player. Like, I think you can make the argument he was the best offensive player on both of Georgia's national title teams. And one of those is when he was an 18-year-old freshman. Mm-hmm. Mid-season this year, it seemed like he was the second pass catcher on a lot of boards, like after Marvin Harrison Jr., before the emergence of Nabers and Adunze. He slid a little bit. He's still a lot of people's top 10 prospect, but he's projected in a lot of mocks and yours as well to go to the Bengals at 18. Do you think his slide is more about his prospect eval or because of the position he plays?
It's just because he took that picture with Gronk.
Yes.
He looked really short and weird. Like he didn't look that athletic. No, not really. But I mean, I don't think that helped, if I'm being totally honest.
Right.
So I think it's twofold. Number one, I think people are kind of scared off at the idea of taking a tight end super high in the draft because of what Kyle Pitts is like, what's happened essentially to Kyle Pitts, not necessarily how Kyle Pitts has played, but like the lack of top tier impact he's made on the Falcons offense through his first couple of years in the league, I think has scared some people off, especially relative to what Ja'Marr Chase has done for the Bengals. And again, that goes back to what I talked about with Marvin Harrison. Like, it obviously helped that Chase landed with Burrow, and they had that connection. They kind of hit the ground running. And the rest is history. But like, obviously, I think Pitts went right before Chase. And so you look back at that and you're like, okay, who's going to make a bigger impact on our team? A top tier receiver or a talented tight end? It's probably going to be the receiver. Plus you add in the value, like the potential value you get in paying a rookie receiver on the rookie scale versus like these receivers that are making, $25 million a year or whatever it is. And that's only seemingly going to keep going up. It's just like growing so fast. We have these mid-tier receivers making like way more than some of the top paid tight ends in the NFL. So like there's a value element here where you can get a top tier receiver and be paying him peanuts relative to the rest of the league. That's a huge, edge for your roster construction versus if you get Brock Bowers and he's pretty good, but not great. You're already paying him near the top of the like league pay scale for tight ends because of where he was drafted, and that doesn't represent a huge value. So I think that's like the argument, but at the same time, like my response to that would be like, okay, but like draft a good player and he's going to help your team. You know what I mean? Like there's so many variables in the draft and so many guys bust, so many guys don't end up being what you think they're going to be. And I look at Brock Bowers and I'm like, man, this guy is just going to help your team immediately. He's going to go out there. He's got basically the same exact size as Sam Laporta. We saw the impact that he had for his team last year. Not saying, those are different propositions because Laporta was a second rounder, but still, like, draft good players is kind of like the bottom line. It's like you're getting too cute
Yeah, figuring out the balance of being cute and also being a football guy is, I think, the dilemma of a lot of front offices because when you can't participate in game planning, you can't actually go on the field. You're trying to find ways to get advantages, and you'll rationalize your way out of great players because you're like, no, we got additional value. Get a dog. Sometimes you need a dumb football guy in the room, which I think there's no shortage of in Detroit. That's like, hey, we need a middle linebacker, a running back, and a Laporta. Give him to us. Let's do it. I see my guy Cooper DeJean. You got him sliding down on your board, or at least relative to how I feel about him at 19.
We're gonna do a new update here, and I'll have him at 16.
Ooh.
So he's I like him a lot. I mean, and you know, obviously the big question is he a corner because he's white?
I think he's a corner.
Yeah.
Yes. That's all I wanted. I saw that you have him listed as a defensive back, and you just You call all the corners defensive backs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I forgive you, but I saw that, and I was like, I'm about to have an issue with racist that is on my show. But no, all your corners are defensive back. I allow it. You do have him comped to a black person, which it's impossible to comp him to anybody else. Like, you can't. There are no white corners except for, like,
what if
Ryan
I would have
Moss.
Just lean in and just do Jason Sehorn?
I think I would have loved you more. I know he's trolling. It would have been fantastic. His rare versatility. I see you sneak that safety in there. You snuck a little safety.
Well, he
in
did
there.
Play. Rare he did play.
I know he is versatile. I'm just messing with you.
By the way, the NFL maybe is gonna make him a quote-unquote defensive back. We'll see. I think he could play corner, but
I think so too. I want him to. The versatility does help because there is there's value to him being able to do that. A lot of the great corners are capable of doing those things, but I just want to play corner for the historical significance.
I know, right?
And for people to have someone to look up to. That's white kids need a role model. you're welcome.
Totally.
You too can play the most important position on a football field.
Yeah, trailblazer, right?
All right, Danny, I appreciate you so much. Charlie, you cool too. Thanks a lot for joining us. I'm looking forward to getting more into this tape and then just reading your piece and stealing your opinions and presenting them as my own. Thank you for giving me permission to do so.
Yeah. Implicit. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. We'll have you on again after these players flop, and we can say Danny was wrong.
It will happen, I'm sure. Some of these guys.
I appreciate it. Charlie, you got anything?
I'm just hoping Brock Bowers doesn't drop to number 20 and get drafted by Arthur Smith in Pittsburgh, because that would...
God. Yeah.
That would be a disaster after the Pitts experience.
We can't have that.
All right. Thanks again, Danny. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you to all the great producers, Megan, Serafina, Kevin, Brian, Cortez, and we're out.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.